Chapter 10. Reacher was falling asleep on the bed in room 310 at the Marriott Suites. He was on his back, like a dead man. He and Hutton had talked so long in the coffee shop that she had almost been late for her appointment. She had checked her watch at 5 to 4 and had thrust her keycard at him and asked him to dump her bag in her room. Then she had run straight out to the street. He guessed he was supposed to leave her card at the desk afterward. But he didn't. He didn't have anywhere he needed to be, not right then, so he just parked the bag and stayed inside. He wasn't crazy about room 310, all things considered. It was on the third floor, which made the window a difficult escape route. Room 8 at the motor court had been better, much better. Ground floor, a tangled old neighborhood, it gave a guy a sporting chance. Open the window, step out, look for an alley or a door or another window, that was good. This was bad. He was 3 floors up, a long climb, and he wasn't even sure if the Marriott's windows opened at all. Maybe they didn't. Maybe the main office lawyers had been worried about liability. Maybe they had foreseen a steady deluge of infants raining down on the parking lot blacktop. Or maybe it was a question of economies of scale. Maybe the cost of hinges and handles outweighed a little extra on the air conditioning bill. Whatever, it wasn't a great room to be in. Not by any measure. Not for the long term. But it was okay for the short term. So he closed his eyes and drifted away. Sleep when you can, because you never know when you're going to sleep again. That was the old army rule. Emerson's plan was pretty straightforward. He put Donna Bianca in room 7. Told the 2 patrolmen to stash their car 3 streets away and walk back and wait in room 9. He put a car 2 streets behind the motor court and another 4 blocks north where the auto dealers were and another 2 blocks south. He told the clerk to stay awake and watch through the window and call Bianca in room 7 as soon as he saw the guy he knew as Hefner walk in. Eileen Hutton got back to the Marriott at 4:30. There was no key card waiting for her at the desk. No message. So she went up in the elevator and followed the arrows to room 310 and knocked on the door. There was a short pause, and then the door opened and Reacher let her in. How's my room?
The bed's comfortable.
I'm supposed to call Emerson if I see you.
Are you going to?
No.
Perjury and harboring a fugitive, all in one day.
She dug in her purse and came out with Emerson's card. You're their only suspect. He gave me 3 separate phone numbers. They sound pretty serious. He took the card from her, put it in his back pocket with the cocktail napkin that had Helen Roden's cell number on it. He was turning into a walking phone book.
How was the thing with Roden?
Straightforward. He said nothing. She moved around, checking the suite. Bathroom, bedroom, living room, kitchenette. She took her bag and stood it neatly against a wall. Want to stay?
He shook his head.
I can't. Okay.
But I could come back later if you like.
She paused a beat. Okay. Come back later.
Alex Roden stepped back into his office and closed the door and called Emerson.
Have you got him yet?
Just a matter of time. We're looking for him all over and we're watching his room. He's at the old motor court under a false name.
That's interesting. It means he might have used a false name at the Metropole, too.
I'll check. I'll show the clerk the picture.
We might really be able to nail him, Roden said.
He clicked off, thinking about the 2 new framed headlines for his office wall. First Bar, and then Reacher. Reacher let himself out of Hutton's suite and used the stairs instead of the elevator. On the ground floor, he turned away from the lobby and found a back corridor with a fire door at the end of it. He pushed the fire door open and held it ajar with his foot, took Emerson's card out of his pocket and tore it in half lengthwise and folded the half with the name on it 4 times. He pressed the tongue into the fire door's lock with the ball of his thumb and wedged it there with the folded cardboard. He closed the door gently and pushed it flush with the frame with the flat of his hand. Then he walked away, past the dumpster, through the staff lot, out to the street, heading north. The sidewalks were busy, and the traffic lanes were starting to clog. He walked at a normal pace and used his height to scan the middle distance for patrol cars or cops on corners. The day was still warm. There was a weather system somewhere out there, somewhere near. There was high pressure in the sky, clamping down, trapping the smell of damp earth and nitrogen fertilizer in the air. He reached the raised highway and turned west in its shadow. The roadbed strode along on pillars 40 feet high. Underneath it were untidy lots, some vacant and full of trash, some with old brick buildings with dark skylights in their roofs, some with new metal sheds housing body shops and spray paint operations. He passed the back of the black glass tower and stayed in the highway's shadow and turned south, ready to pass behind the library. He stopped suddenly and crouched and fiddled with his shoe like he had a stone, glanced back under his arm and saw nobody behind him. No tail. He moved on. After the library, he was exposed for 40 yards. The plaza was east of him. He stopped momentarily on a spot he judged was directly below where Helen Roden had parked the day before and where James Barr should have parked on Friday. 40 feet lower down, the view was different, but the geometry was the same. He could see the wilted tributes propped against the pool's southern wall. There were small splashes of faded color in the distance. Beyond them was the DMV's door. People were coming out in ones and twos. He checked his watch. 10 to 5. He moved on, in the open, and made it across to First Street's northernmost block. He looped one block south and three blocks east, and came up on the parking garage's entrance from the west. He walked up the ramp and found the security camera's lens. It was a small circle of dirty glass mounted on a plain black box that was bolted high up in the angle of two concrete beams. He waved at it. It was too high, ideally. It should have been lower, at license plate level. But all the pillars below waist height were scuffed and scraped, a rainbow of different colors. Drivers were careless. Mounted lower, the camera would have lasted a day and a half, maybe less. He walked up the ramps to the second level, headed north and east to the far back corner. The garage was still and quiet, but full. The space that James Barr had used was occupied. No room for sentiment in the scramble for downtown parking. No room for reverence. The border between the old garage and the new construction was marked by a triple barrier of tape strung between pillars. There was standard yellow and black contractors' caution do not enter tape, and above it and below it were new lengths of blue and white police line do not cross tape. He used his forearm and stretched all three lines higher and just ducked underneath. No need to drop to one knee. No need to scuff a pair of jeans. No need to leave a mess of fibers. Not even for a guy 6 inches taller than Barr, and not even with a new line of tape 6 inches lower than the one Barr had encountered. He was literally going out of his way to leave every last piece of evidence he could, Reacher thought. He walked on into the gloom. The new construction was rectangular in shape, maybe 40 yards south to north, maybe 200 east to west, which meant Reacher arrived at the new northeast corner after 35 paces. He stood 6 feet back from the perimeter wall and looked down and right. He had a perfectly good view. No need to press up against a pillar. No need to squirm around like a horse on its back in a summer meadow. He stood there and watched. People were coming out of the government office in increasing numbers. There was quite a flow. Some paused and lit cigarettes as soon as they were out in the air. Others moved on directly west, some fast, some slow. All of them turned and tracked around the north end of the pool. None of them walked where Barr's victims had walked. The funeral tributes were a disincentive, a reminder. Therefore, it was hard to judge what Friday's scene had looked like. Hard, but not impossible. Reacher watched the walking people, and in his mind made them forego their respectful right turns. He made them continue straight on. They would be slow entering the bottleneck, but not too slow, and they would be close. The combination of moderate speed and proximity would exaggerate the deflection angles. It would make the job harder. It was a basic principle of long gun use. A bird traversing the sky 100 yards away was an easy target. The same bird at the same speed flying 6 feet in front of your face was an impossible target. He pictured the people streaming right to left.
He closed one eye and extended his arm and pointed his finger. Click, 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 click. 6 aimed shots. 4 seconds. Fast. Tough geometry. Tension. Exposure, vulnerability. 6 hits, including the deliberate miss. Exceptional shooting. They don't forget. He dropped his arm to his side. It was cold in the gloom. He shivered. The air was clammy and damp and full of the smell of lime. It had been hot in Kuwait City. The air had been shimmering and full of the smell of baked dust and desert sand. Reacher had stood in the parking garage and sweated. The street below him had been blinding, murderous like a blast furnace. Hot in Kuwait City. 4 shots there, 6 shots here. He stood and watched the people coming out the DMV door. There were plenty of them. 10, 12, 15, 20. They turned and looped north and then turned again and walked west between the pool and the NBC Peacock. They gave each other space. But if they had been in the bottleneck, they would have bunched up tight. Plenty of them. 6 shots in 4 seconds. He looked for anyone not moving. Didn't see anybody. No cops. No old men in boxy suits. He turned around and retraced his steps. Lifted the tape again and ducked under it and walked back down the ramps. Slipped out to the street and turned west, heading for the shadows under the highway. Heading for the library. He crossed the 40 yards of open ground and hugged the library's side wall and went in through a handicapped entrance. He had to walk close to the desk, but he wasn't worried about that. If Emerson started circulating wanted notices, he would hit the post offices and bars and hotels first. It would be a long time before he started canvassing librarians. He made it to the lobby, okay, and stepped over to the payphones, took the cocktail napkin out of his pocket, and dialed Helen Roden's cell. She picked up on the 5th ring. He pictured her rooting through her purse, squinting at the screen, fumbling with the buttons. Are you alone?
Reacher?
Yes, are you alone?
Yes, but you're in trouble.
Who called you?
My father.
You believe him?
No.
I'm coming to see you.
There's a cop in the lobby.
I figured. I'll come in through the garage. He hung up and walked back past the desk and out the side entrance, back under the highway. He stayed in its shelter until he was opposite the back of the black glass tower, opposite the vehicle ramp. He checked left, checked right, and walked straight down, past the NBC trucks, past the Mustang he figured for Ann Yanny's, to the elevator. He pressed the call button and waited, checked his watch. 5:30. Most people would be leaving the building. A down elevator was certain to stop at the lobby level. An up elevator? Maybe not. He hoped. The car arrived in the garage and let 3 people out. They walked away. Reacher stepped in, pressed 4, stood back. The car rose 1 floor and stopped. In the lobby. The doors slid back like a theater curtain. The cop was right there, 4 feet from the elevator, facing away. He had his feet apart and his hands on his hips. He was almost close enough to touch. A man stepped into the elevator. He didn't speak, just nodded a 2 guys in an elevator greeting. Reacher nodded back. The guy pressed 7. The doors stayed open. The cop watched the street. The new guy jiggled the button. The cop moved. He swiped his cap off his head and ran his fingers through his hair. The doors closed. The elevator moved up. Reacher got out on 4 and walked through a small knot of people on their way home. Helen Roden had her door open and ready. He stepped inside her suite and she closed up after him. She was wearing a short black skirt and a white blouse. She looked young, like a schoolgirl. And she looked worried, like a conflicted person.
I should turn you in.
But you won't.
No, I should, but I won't.
Truth is, I liked that girl. She was a sweet kid.
She set you up.
I wasn't offended.
Someone didn't like her.
We can't tell. Affection didn't come into it. She was disposable, that's all. A means to an end.
The puppet master really doesn't want you around.
Reacher nodded. That's for damn sure. But he's shit out of luck there because I'm not leaving now. He just guaranteed that for himself.
Is it safe to stay?
It's safe enough. But this thing with the girl is going to slow me down, so you're going to have to do most of the work. She led him into the inner office. She sat down at her desk. He stayed well away from the window. He sat on the floor and propped his back against the wall.